What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We are a podcast in support of women's professional golf from people who walk inside the ropes on the LPGA Tour. My name's Casey Johnson. I'm a 13-year PGA of Canada member, turned caddy, really enjoying that transition and being in amongst the action. I've been growing the games for a long, long time, and this is just a natural transition. Go ahead and check us out. We are at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms. And, you know, we've only been doing this for 4 months or so, but we're in 40 countries all over the world now. It's just crazy what the internet can do. So, you know, really cool to see that. Continue to grow the game, grow the women's game, and just a really great cause. So go ahead and share and like around with anybody who you might think interested. I'm joined by my good friend, Captain Ron Dunn. And Ronnie also works inside the ropes, putting arc representative, super stroke rep, and he does the luggage transportation for a lot of the ladies and caddies, dragging bags from stop to stop. So I'm just going to go ahead and say I'm pretty stoked for this one, Ronnie. What's going on with you, brother?
Hey, I'm excited as well. We got us a champion this time. It's going to be fun. Looking forward to talking to Gemma when she gets here, and just having a real good time. Hope the listeners enjoy this, because we're coming to you with the full-fledged champion right now.
Awesome. Gemma, why don't you jump in and say hello. Gemma Driesberg is sitting in front of us. So what's happening, Gemma?
Hi. Thanks for having me, guys. It's good to be on the pod. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so you've just flown over. You're quarantining in the States. Obviously, everybody's got to do 2 week mandatory quarantine before they kick off with the first event in Ohio. So where are you at right now?
I'm just outside Detroit in Michigan, so not too far from Toledo. So it'll be a nice drive down in a couple weeks. So yeah, staying with, actually, it's my college roommate's parents. From Tulane, so know them pretty well. They've actually headed out of town for the weekend, so I've got a place to myself, so it's not too bad.
I was just going to ask why you chose Detroit, but there's my answer. So can you give the listeners just a little bit of a biography about yourself? I mean, you're going to do a way better job than my cliff notes here. Please.
Yep, so originally from Aberdeen, Scotland. Was born in Aberdeen, and then my dad's job moved us down to just outside London when I was about 10 years old. My dad worked in London he's still working there now. So we live in a town called Beaconsfield, just west of London. So based there still. So moved down there when I was 10, like I said, and then went to IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida when I was 15. So I moved over to Bradenton, Florida for that. It was my sophomore year I moved over. Finished out high school there, and then went to Tulane University for 4 years. And then graduated from there in 2015. Then did all the Q schools, LET and LPGA Q school, and qualified for LET that year. Played on LET, still playing on LET now, but then qualified for LPGA in 2018. So that's a quick synopsis.
How did you get onto the LPGA? Was it through the Q series or LET? Like, what was the road for you there?
Yeah, so it's through Q series. It was back in Daytona when in 2017. So it was the 5-day format back then.
And super, just a random question about like, is the LET like in order to? And this might not have any relevance yet, but like the Solheim Cup, do you have to be? Is it like the men's where you have to be a member of the LET to like be status in that sort of running?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah, I think Bronte had to do Q school a couple years ago to qualify for last year's Solheim. So it's a requirement for being on the Solheim. So it's good that I got it done straight away after college and didn't have to do it later on. So it was, it's great to be on LET, and I love playing those events when I can.
Speaking of LET, everybody's been chomping at the bit to get back in golf, but you have been exceptional in a little bit of off time in some circumstantial tour and the Rose Ladies series. Ron and I chatted in length last week, and you know, the last few weeks, just about your back-to-back wins there, and just Justin and Kate Rose stepping up for women's golf, and just exclusively in the United Kingdom. Could you talk a little bit about the Rose Series tour and just kind of, you know, how it's coming to fruition for the audience? Yep.
Yeah, definitely. So during lockdown, so we had about 7 weeks off the golf course during lockdown in the UK. It was a bit longer in Scotland, actually. I think it was 9 weeks for them. But anyway, so during that time, we got an email from one of the LET players, Liz Young, saying that she was going to organise an event at her home club, Brockenhurst Manor. And I think all of us were very excited. We're like, yep, definitely playing. It was just going to be a one-day event, you know, entry fees went into the pot and you play for that. Old school way of doing it. So then it was basically the Telegraph paper, newspaper, put an article about the event, and I believe Kate read the article and you know, spoke to Justin. Was like, why don't we? I think there might have been some connection there. I'm not sure if they're kind of from the same place or not, but I'm not sure if she knew Liz or not. But anyway, she contacted Liz and was like, let's make this. You know, can we add this to a proper series? Add a few dates. You know, we're not starting up for the LET girls till the Scottish Open, and we didn't even know that was going to go ahead then. I think at the time, I think Evian was still on, so they thought they had kind of a 6 week period or something to get events in. So then it kind of just went from strength to strength. I think as soon as Kate and Justin got involved, people courses all over the country, only in England, but because we couldn't travel up to Scotland, unfortunately, due to the restrictions, which was a shame for the girls up north. But anyway, they were very lucky for everyone that lived down south. And yeah, amazing courses on the series. It just went from strength to strength. And now, unfortunately, I obviously can't play the rest of it. But I think the final event is over 3 days, over three different courses, and the last one's at Wentworth. So that'll be the first women's event there. Where I won in St. George's, that was the first women's pro event there. So some history being made.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. What you won at 137 years, St. George, Royal St. George has been in there, and you won the first women's tournament ever. That's going to go down in history. Congratulations. So you won the third and fourth event of a one-day off tournament. How did that work? Were they four tournaments in a row every other day, or how was the scheduling going?
It was basically every Thursday of each week. So just one day on every Thursday. So yeah, it worked out pretty well. So it gave us time to kind of ease ourselves back into it, I guess. I think starting off with a 4 day event might have been a bit much. But yeah, it eased us back into it just with one day, which was a bit strange actually, because we're so used to playing, you know, the 4 days. But yeah, it was almost like playing like, you know, a Monday qualifier type vibe. But it was good. I mean, I say that, but like there was a lot of media there, a lot of media attention. It felt like a big event almost. And yeah, it's just got so much attention over in the UK, which is great to see. You know, Sky Sports was covering it, which is our main, you know, sports channel. I guess it's like ESPN over here, I guess. So it was great to get that coverage. And, you know, they are small events. So like a small event that usually would get that sort of coverage and media attention. So it was great to see that, and got the first tee butterflies in the first event again. So that was a nice feeling.
That's right. Dust off the rust and get it going out there. But with Justin Rose puts his name to it, that brings a little clout. So Sky Sports was right there for you guys. That's really good. Did you guys get to practice on the courses before you played on the Thursday event?
So all the courses allowed us practice rounds, which was really great. So I got a practice round the first 3 weeks. I didn't get a practice round at St. George's just because it was just with the time, my schedule, and it was a couple hour drive from where I live. So and I had played it in the British Am 6 years ago, so I had played the course at least. Yeah, I did get a practice round. So but it was interesting playing without a practice round. I've not done that before, I don't think. But yeah, they are allowing practice rounds, which is great. And I think the one they played yesterday at a brand new course, JCB. I think the girls got to stay in the hotel there. So yeah, great hospitality.
I feel like I've got 100 questions here, but what was it like? And again, we're heading back on tour in less than a couple of weeks here with no fans. What was it like? And I know it's just a one day. It feels similar to, like, I mean, as a PGA member in our like a territory in our province, we have all sorts of 1 and 2 day events, and trust me, there are no fans, so I know what it's like. But what's it like for, you know, somebody who's been playing professional golf for a few years now to just go and tee it up with no fans? And how do you think that's going to be when you're playing in Ohio?
Yeah, so it was actually interesting because, well, we had like a bunker raker with us and someone to take the pin out on each hole and a score. So we had some people walking with us. And then at St. George's, I was in the marquee group, which was, I was very lucky to be in with Georgia Hall and Charlie Hull. So we had some camera crew with us and various media. So it wasn't completely empty. But yeah, it is strange. I mean, playing an event with no one there, I think it'll be strange on the LPGA because we're used to fans being around. And but I don't think it takes away from the competition aspect of it. I think we're always still, you know, trying to win and do our best. So I don't think it takes away from that part of it. It's just a different vibe, I'd say.
Yeah, I can totally relate to, you know, you're there trying to win. It doesn't matter if people are watching, and that's, you know, sport at its purest, you know. And you can go to Olympics, amateur athletes. I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of, you know, winter Olympians in my tenure, just up where I'm from. And it's just, you know, for the purity of the sport and just wanting to win. Right. So really, really cool. What do you think about, I read a quote that you say the Rose Series has taken off more so than other ladies kind of feeder tours or series. And do you think it's like a combination of like obviously Justin Rose backing it, like having his name behind it, having the COVID times where like nobody's really focusing on much else as far as sports are concerned? Like, do you think it was just kind of like a perfect storm?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've summed it up pretty well. Having Justin Rose behind it and his name has just been amazing. And a combination of, you know, not much live sport going on. Especially, I think the first event, I think we were the first women's professional, like of any sport, to start in the UK. So that was pretty special, us being the first to start again. And I think that's just got a bit of buzz behind it. And I hope this can be a springboard to maybe an LET English Open or something like that, because there's no, you know, professional women's event in England apart from when the British is there, but that doesn't really count. It's not a regular season event. There's obviously the Scottish Open, but there's nothing in England, which is crazy to me. So many good courses, and you'd think, I mean, great golf fans as well. So I hope this can be a springboard into something like that. And it just shows you that what the sponsorship can do for the women's game.
Great golf fans in the UK. In fact, just looking at our numbers there before this podcast, the UK, you know, their listenership is huge, and we really, really give a shout out to them and appreciate that. But yeah, like Rose Series, supposed to be a one-off thing, but like, do you see Justin and Kate now, because it's been so well received? And I don't know if you know Justin at all personally or Kate, but like, do you think they'll see it as an opportunity or a sense of duty, like now that they've stepped up and it's been so well received, like you know, maybe like you said, there's an LET event sponsored by them next year. Like, is there any chatter about next year, or is it too early to say, you know, any chatter?
Well,
there,
I was actually speaking to the organizers last week, and they're hoping that they can continue it in some sort of way next year. Because it's obviously going to be difficult maybe during the summer to do it, because we're usually hopefully pretty busy. But there's always some sort of gap in the LET schedule that I'm sure we could, the Rose Series could continue. And, or, you know, hopefully maybe a proper LET event that could happen from it. So I don't see why not. And I think they're looking towards that. They're not, haven't looked into it quite yet. I think after the series is done, they'll be able to look forward to next year and see what happens with that. But I think it would be a shame to kind of stop the momentum of the series and, you know, what Justin and Kate have done, just to stop it here, because it's just been amazing for the game. Even though it's just been in the UK, I think all over the women's game. I mean, my friends on the LPGA have been so excited. They've been watching it every week, and it's just so great to see someone like Justin stepping up for us. And I hope, you know, other male pros might do the same.
So, winner, back-to-back wins. I know they were one-day events, but what does that do? And I chatted with Ronnie about this, you know, a couple of weeks ago, because, again, as a player kind of coach background mentality, like, it all it takes is a few putts dropping here, you know, a few things going your way. It is like, you know, you won in a playoff, you win by one stroke, like, it really is a game of inches. But how big is that for your confidence moving into Ohio? And what's the difference between getting it done? I mean, obviously the depth of field is tremendously different on an LPGA event, but 4 days versus 1 day. I know I just took through like six different basket of questions at you there, but just elaborate a little bit on your confidence level moving forward into Ohio.
Yeah, it definitely brings, you know, helps my confidence tremendously, I think. For example, like the first event, I saw the leaderboard after 12 holes and I was even par at the time, and Georgia Hall was at 2 under. Then I birdied 13 and 14. Then I was obviously 2 under. So I was like, okay, this could be interesting. So then I birdied 16, then I was 3 under. And then there's a couple people that kind of came to our group and stuff, and I was like, okay, must be in there. So it's just kind of, you're in that, even though it's a 1 day event, you still got the same feelings of being in contention. And, you know, Georgia Hall, she's a great competitor, and you just, I mean, she could, I didn't know what she was at that time, but.
Major champion.
Exactly. Yeah. British Open champion. And so then on the 18th, I saw the leaderboard and I needed a 2-putt to win. And just getting that done was an amazing feeling. And just knowing that I knew I had to do that, and I did it. So that's so much confidence. And then the next week at St. George's, I was obviously playing with Georgia and Charlie, and we kind of knew that, you know, they're going to be up there. They've been up there the last events they've played as well. And so we were always kind of keeping an eye on each other. I was keeping an eye on them at least. I actually lost track of what Charlie was at. I thought I was one ahead going into 18, but we were actually all square. I'm talking like it was match play, but yeah, it was, I knew on, I think on 12, I saw leaderboard as well. And I think I was in the lead at that point. I think, because I got it to 2 under at one point, but unfortunately bogeyed 15. But anyway, I mean, we're all kind of thereabouts all day on the same score, and just to do it against them, I mean, it's such a confidence boost. It's great company to be in, and to get it done on those last two holes at St. George's, they were playing really tough. I think I had 3 wood into the last two in both par fours, so dead into the wind, both of them. So it was a tough finish, and it was just probably hit the shot of my life on 17, that 3 wood into that green, just kind of, you know, coming into the last two holes. It was, I was pretty nervous, and just to hit, you know, a 3 wood into a par four, it's such a tough shot into the wind and stuff. So to get it done was, yeah, it was an amazing feeling.
Yeah, you're not quite as long as they are off the tee, so you were taking a lot of hybrids and a lot of woods into the par fours. And they've got longer irons in them. What was that like? You get the first one to hit. Did you feel that you could put the pressure on them?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not as long as them. They were a good 20 yards ahead of me, especially on that hole. I think, well, Charlie, unfortunately, she hit it. Well, fortunately for me, but unfortunately for her, she hit it into the long grass on the left and then had to chip out. But yeah, Georgia, she kind of, on the 17th hole especially, she kind of got this downhill, and she was probably a good 30 or 40 yards in front of me at that hole. So it was, I mean, I'm sitting there with a 3 wood and she's probably hitting, I'm not sure what she was hitting in, but they have a very different bag to me. I think they both go up to a 3 iron. I mean, my lowest iron's a 6 iron, and then I have hybrids. So very different game to the two of them. But yeah, Georgia actually said to me after, she's like, wow, you're so good with your woods. Every time I would look back, you got wood in your hand, and then it went, you know, on the green. So that was nice to hear from her.
Yeah.
And Royal St. George is a link style course. touch on that a little bit for us Americans out there, the difference between our standard American golf course versus links. Did you grow up playing links?
I didn't actually. Moving down to London when I was 10, we just got Parkland courses and land courses where I live. But I always used to play the amateur events in the summer, and they always were at links courses, and the Scottish events as well in the summer. Usually lots of wind. And yeah, I love links golf. It's very different to American golf. It's more keep the ball on the ground as much as possible. And you know, they've got the pot bunkers, which are very penal. Yeah, it's more on the ground rather than in the air. And you can't throw darts at the pins. And obviously it's usually very windy too.
And it was a very special Thursday in your family's life. Your mom and dad were celebrating your 38th anniversary. What did you get them for a wedding or an anniversary gift? Was it a dip and chip bowl?
I got them some champagne and some chocolates. But I think when I won, that was obviously a much better prize. But it was funny actually, because my first professional win was in 2017 in Australia, and it was actually my dad's birthday I won it on. So that was pretty cool. And then winning on their anniversary. So yeah, we had quite a few drinks that night.
Was he on your back for all four tournaments?
He was, yeah. So our caddies had to be from our own household. It was great to have him on the bag. But yeah, I think he's done pretty well with the time he's caddied for me.
I think so.
I assume he'd caddied for you before over the years, just to being a, you know, a golfer, an up and coming golfer. And there's some serious success there. I love Paul. I really love Paul. But are we going to see your dad down the road somewhere for a little, sneak peek or a little celebrity show up?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to negotiate with Paul, I'm sure. We'll see. I'm not sure what Paul would think, but I do love Paul, and he's going to be coming out to the Scottish and the British, which I'm excited for. Dad caddied for me when I qualified for the LPGA. So he carried that Q school. So we might have to do some negotiating. We'll see.
Yeah, you're talking about Georgia's game and Charlie's game, and I've never played with Georgia, but like Charlie bombs it, and you're coming in there with your three woods and stuff, but you're a pretty deadly putter out there, and just spitballing here, but like, how did you get ready for those Rose Series events? What are you working on specifically now, and like, do you work with a coach or what are you working on?
So my long-term coach is Lawrence Farmer. I've been working with him since I was about 12. I've just started work, well, not just, about a year and a bit ago, I started working with a putting coach, Nick Soto. So we've done some great stuff with my putting, and that's probably been the biggest change in my game the last kind of 6 months, I'd say. The start of this year, had a good start to the year, and I think the putting's been the main change for me. With the form I'm in recently. I've also started doing aimpoint at the start of this year. And I think that's been a huge thing for me. It's getting me to aim higher, which I think is always a good thing. I think I was always kind of aiming on the low side of the putts. So that's been a huge change for me. And it's great to see it pull off in the last couple of events.
Again, as a coaching background, a strong personal putter, one of the things I love to do with my students is just block off the low side of the hole. A great drill, for any amateur golfer out there, like you said, you tended to aim a little bit low, which actually brings in a little bit more firmer speed in order to try to make it. And then, if you're not appropriate, you're going to be running it a little by. And as we know, the low side's the amateur side, and we all want to be on the pro side. Other than aim point, you said that the putting coach has made a drastic change in your game. Is there any little details that you can go into for the listeners about what other things?
With my putting or just generally?
Putting, yeah.
Putting. So I've actually just moved to a thinner grip. I had quite a thick grip on my putter, and it's just trying to get I was almost, I putt left hand low. And I was almost getting a little bit too rigid, and we're just trying to get the hands in it a bit more and getting the putter to release. I get a little bit blocky almost with my stroke. So we've been working a lot on that. A lot of setup stuff, just trying to get the line of the putter, same as my arms, if that makes sense. Just kind of working as a unit. And yeah, so it's been really good working with him. And we did work a lot on pace as well, and kind of the rhythm of my stroke was a little slow, so just getting that a little bit quicker, a bit better rhythm to it.
Without getting into too much detail, can you explain aim point just a little? I know Justin Rose does it. I see Lydia Ko out there with the fingers up. What exactly are you guys doing?
So basically, on the putts, you kind of, depending on how long it is, like a 6 foot and in, you just go to the middle of the putt and you straddle the line and kind of feel which side is higher than the other. So, you know, typically a 1% slope is pretty common. Twos and threes, twos definitely come into it, and threes is pretty severe. You do get an odd four, but you're just trying to feel for which way it's breaking, it's really worked for me. It's kind of, because sometimes your eyes can deceive you a little bit. So I kind of try to stick to that as much as possible instead of looking at the line with my eyes. And then from there, for example, if it's a 1 degree, you aim your finger. If it's 6 foot and in, it's just on the edge of the hole. And then 6 foot and out, it's on the middle of the hole with your finger. And then on the edge, other edge of your fingers where you aim. So if that kind of makes sense without...
Ronnie, yeah, like I'm just gonna, because we're on camera here, nobody can see us, but you hold out your finger like that. That's the 1 degree, Ron, 2 degree, 3 degree that she's talking about. Is that right, Gemma?
Yeah, that's right.
But are you feeling it more with your feet?
Yeah, with your feet. So a lot of people, I think some people close their eyes. I don't close my eyes, but yeah, you just feel it with your feet, and you don't want to stand over it too long, because I think then you can kind of change your mind from there. And also I forgot to mention the different speed of greens. You kind of adjust your elbow from there, so you bring your faster the green, you bring the hand closer to your face, so the aim goes higher.
I just want to backpedal here quickly, and then Ron, I've actually got a question for you just as far as grips, because Gemma said that she's moved to a smaller grip, and just, you know, she, for the listeners, she's really concentrated on just getting her speed, her alignment, like everything lined up properly and aiming the putter. Like, it seems so simple. Do you think most amateur golfers can just, you know, spend some time on their speed and like focusing on properly aiming well? And, you know, it's the low hanging fruit. It's not very sexy, but like they could probably get a lot better with minimal, effort compared to all the hours spent on the range. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you could get a mirror and see where you're aiming with your shoulders and your eyes over the ball, or just slightly inside if you want to. And then from there, maybe just get a gate in front of the ball and see if you're starting it online. And then from there, just work on a bit of speed, and I think you're good to go. You don't need to complicate it too much.
And Ron, this one's for you. Again, I'm like Gemma. I like a really thin grip. I believe that, you know, it's circumstantial for sure. But, you know, like Gemma said, players get really, you know, those fatsos. I get that it takes the hands out of it. But I also believe that the hands are what you, I wouldn't toss a ball to Gemma, you know, with my shoulder and be super rigid, right? Like, you lose all the feel. So my question for you, Ronnie, is like, what kind of percentage do you see the on tour with like Super Stroke 1.0 putter grips up to like the Fatso? What's the correlation there?
Well, I think KJ Choi popularized it 15 years ago. He had the big 5.0, the real big fat one. And yeah, it takes your hands out of it, which a lot of the putting coaches say they do not like that. They want you to be able to feel it with your hands. The majority of the girls, I'd say, are out there about 1.0s, 1.5, you know, right about there. It's a little oversized than the normal putting grip. One thing about Rosemark that Gemma plays is it's conformed to the way your shape of your hand. Superstroke is a little bit fatter and wider and rounder. They do have some flat ones. They do have one that now comes up and locks up on your wrist, kind of like Bryson DeChambeau. But yeah, the smaller grip, your hands are more involved and it takes your bigger muscles out of it. But a lot of the amateurs, they get the yips and the jitters out there. So the bigger one takes their hands out, gets the bigger muscles involved. And it seems easier to swing with your shoulders, I believe.
Yeah, I can definitely assist with that. And again, it's all circumstantial. We're pretty cognizant of your time, Gemma. We appreciate you having you on, and I've got some more questions here, but we won't keep you too much longer. And just, you know, being a, again, I'm a Tiger era boom person, and you know, like pretty, you know, new to the female world of golf, like really focusing with more of a microscope on it. And like growing up in the UK, who are some people that you looked up to, you know, players, it could be male or female, but like what's the players that you grew up looking towards?
Well, I think two big ones for me were Katrina Matthew from Scotland and Laura Davis. I remember going to the the Women's British Open at Sunningdale, watching Laura there, and I was just amazed. She actually, I can't remember which hole it was. It was towards the end, about 16th hole maybe, kind of pulled it into the long rough. And she tried this shot that, I mean, you would never believe that it would be, you know, you'd even consider it. She had to go over this huge tree and she's in this long rough. And I mean, she almost pulled it off. It literally clipped the top, very top of the tree. Unfortunately, I think she might have made a double or something on that hole, but it was so cool to see that kind of in person. And she's obviously such a successful golfer, the best that we've ever had. She's a dame, obviously, and definitely looked up to her, and Katrina as well. Great to see her win the Women's British at Lytham, just, you know, shortly after she had, I think it was her second child. So it's just amazing, inspirational. And yeah, those are kind of the two I looked up to.
And Dame Laura Davies was in the group, your win last week. Did she come up and say anything to you? Are you guys friends now, friendly?
We weren't in the same group, but I did see her out there. I didn't get to chat to her, unfortunately, but I think she did quite well. I think she finished top 10.
She did.
Last year was my rookie year on tour. And Laura was out there for quite a few events, and that was one of the women's golf starstruck moments for me, is like, you know, because again, that's my demographic for the women's game, you know, is really watching her. She's super famous, and you know, at the pub having a Guinness with a few of the player caddies and stuff like that. And I just like, that's really cool. And I'm gonna give a little shout out to Ronnie here, who's Ron's luggage transportation. Wasn't Dame Laura Davies your very first client and bag that you transported when you got out there?
That was my rookie cherry right there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. Unfortunately, I made a rookie mistake, and I was traveling from San Francisco to Texas. Didn't consider the two-hour time difference that I lost, so I ended up 20 minutes late from where I wanted to be there at 9 a.m., but she was fine with it. Her caddy Misty came out and grabbed the bag 9:20. She was on the tee at 9:30. All was good, but very friendly lady. And I too have good memories. I was sitting in a bar at the Galloway, New Jersey last year. And sure enough, Dame Laura Davies sitting at the bar, bellying up, having a pint, and just with the normal people. It was really, and she's a very nice lady. She's a super stroker, so I talked to her a little bit, but very cordial, very humble, just a real all around great lady.
Yeah, she seems very down to earth. I was lucky enough to play with her, and sorry.
Go ahead.
I was lucky enough to play with her in Dubai. I think she shot like, it must have been 66 or something. Great round of golf, so it was good to watch that. I think that was in, I don't know, I think 2017 actually. Yeah, so.
It's good to see her out there competing still. And all I was going to do is give a shot to Lexi Thompson and say, Ron, at least you didn't turn the rig around with anybody else's clubs in it, bud.
Never would do that. They'd have to come touch me.
I've just got a couple more questions, but how you doing over there, Ronnie?
Good. I was just at Gemma. You're up there in Michigan. There's a Symmetra Tour event going on in that state that's about 2 hours from Toledo. Are you by any chance teeing it up next week there?
I'm not. I decided not to do that since I would have to miss another Rose Series event for that, because I'm glad I didn't do it, obviously, because I wouldn't have had the St. George's experience. Because obviously we would have to be in the country 2 weeks before. So decided not to. It is close, not too far from here. So we'll see how the girls do next week.
What week is the Rose Series finale, and is there any chance that you could potentially play it?
So it's the week before the Scottish it finishes. So I'll be in Toledo at the marathon, unless that drastically gets cancelled, which I hope not. I'm sure it won't be. I unfortunately won't be able to.
Speaking of the marathon, they just posted the other day, no fans will be at that one. I'm not sure about if the pro-am is going to be going on, but definitely for the next three events, I believe, here in the States, the two in Toledo, then as far out as ANA, our first major in Palm Springs, no fans. Mm-hmm. It's just getting to be a ghost town out there. It's, you know, the LPGA needs that revenue. They need that source of revenue to keep things going, but hopefully we can get back on track with some fans out there. I know I'll be outside the fence yelling in at you. count on that.
Hey, Ron, as long as we're back going, maybe it's an extra sponsorship possibility for people with a little extra TV coverage. I've got actually questions keep popping up in my head here. Regards to the Rose Series, who's your dark horse? Who's going to take it down? Who should we be watching for the Order of Merit?
Charlie Hall's looking pretty good. I think she's top now. She's been playing, I think she's been top 10 every event.
Is she not going to Ohio?
No, she decided to stay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, she was going to come, but then decided last minute that she was going to stay and play the Rose Series. So she's doing well. And then Gabs Cowley, my friend of mine that won yesterday, she's been, I think she's done the top 12 the last five, and she obviously won yesterday. And obviously Meg McLaren is up there. She's obviously been very consistent, won one as well. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see who gets it in the end.
What about Georgia Hall? Did she make the trip over here for quarantine time before the Toledos?
No, she didn't. She's staying at home as well. I think that was always her plan, to stay. She missed the first couple on the Rose Series. So I'm not sure where she's at. I'm sure she's up there because she's had top five, definitely the last three events. So she'll be one to watch as well.
I hope we can catch it on TV over here for Wentworth, the West Course. That's a very famous course, and that's where the final event is going to be at. That should be good. There's some good names up there.
Yeah, I was actually lucky enough to play it with one of my sponsors the day after I played won the Bucks event in the Rose Series, and it's a great course, very tough. So it'll be it's quite the last hole. If people at home haven't been there, it's a par five and surrounded by water, and if you want to lay up, there's not much space to lay up into, I realized. So it's almost better to just go for it. There's a little bit of a bailout spot on the right there, but yeah, great course, and it'll be cool to see the ladies play.
What kind of treat do you think it's going to be at the drive-on playing the Inverness Club, which is hosting the Solheim next year? It's supposed to be pretty special. We were trying to get out there last year when we were in Toledo for the marathon, but everybody must be pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, super excited. I heard about it last year, how great a course it was, and obviously hosting the Solheim next year. So it'll be great to play it, and it's an honour that they've let us have their event there. So last minute.
Goals moving forward, Gemma, I know people are pretty, you know, like they might not necessarily like to put that sort of stuff out in the open, but if there is something you'd like to share with us, and just like managing expectations after coming off some Rose Series wins, and just, obviously we hope we can finish out the year. I know everything's frozen as far as rankings are concerned, but there's still some money to be made and some majors to get into, and just you know, your goals for the 2020 season moving into 2021, and just managing expectations out there after a couple of wins.
Three-peat. Yes.
Yeah, three-peat. Definitely. Yeah, a win on the LPGA would be amazing. Obviously that's everyone's goal. But yeah, at the start of the year, my goals were to get into the majors. Thankfully, I've got into the British through my, I'm top five on the LET Order of Merit. So that got me into that. So that's one major. And hopefully I can I've got a chance still to qualify for the ANA. I think we have to be top 20 on the money list who have not already qualified. Just looking to the majors, really. I've only had one major appearance. My last year was my first at KPMG. So I'd love to add to that. And the British is the first one on the list. So, that's kind of the goals for now.
Those are good goals, if I'd say so, playing in four majors, making the cut in four majors, and that just, jumps up rankings everywhere, money list, official world ranking points. Once you get into that sort of stuff,
definitely.
It makes it a lot easier to stay there. So thanks so much, Gemma, for coming on the show, the Let's Talk Divots podcast. Where can people find you? Is there anything that we can link in the show notes, how to get involved, maybe the Rose series or just your Instagram handles or whatever?
Yeah, so Instagram and Twitter are just at Gemma Drybra, just my full name. And I do have a Facebook page as well, just Gemma Drybra as well. So pretty easy to find me on there.
Well, congratulations. Beautiful. Again on those two wins. Take that momentum into Toledo, and hopefully we can see you in Palm Springs at the ANA and any other majors that we might be having later this year.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Hope to see you guys soon, and thanks for having me again.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We really enjoyed that talk with Gemma. Really hoping to see her momentum carry over into Ohio, into the rest of the LPGA season. So awesome. Give Gemma a little bit of a follow there. We're going to link her stuff in the show notes. And give us a follow. Go ahead, share this with your friends. We just want to continue to see some growth and spread the love and just continue to grow. Not only the game, but the women's game, the game globally as a whole. That's kind of our mission. And go ahead, send us an email, letstalkdivots@gmail.com, and interact with us. Ask us any questions, and we'll answer them as we go on the show. And other than that, we appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in, and leave us a comment, share it around. All right, ciao for now.